Anderson has been through what must be one of the most frightening things anybody could ever experience, being kidnapped. He was among a group of Western tourists held for over 3 months by Marxist rebels in Colombia in 2003. The remarkable thing about Henderson's story is that 6 years later, the TV producer went back to meet and interview one of the people who held him captive for the gripping film My Kidnapper. I spoke to him last week when he was in Prague to present it at the One World Festival of Human Rights Documentaries.
I was on holiday in Colombia in 2003, and I was on a trek, and on the morning of the fourth day, we were just about to leave the place we were in to come back down the mountain, and about 4:30 in the morning, a group of armed men burst into our hut and took us hostage. I mean, initially, they told us they were taking us to safety, that there was some people had been killed on the path, on the way to the Lost City, which is where we were, and these guys were going to take us to safety. It was only 25 hours into the experience that we realized we actually had been kidnapped.
How did the kidnappers treat you in the first few days after your kidnapping, and what kind of relationship did you begin to form with them?
I mean, in the first few days, we just didn't know what was going on. It was all very confusing. You know, I'd never been in that kind of experience before. I'd never had armed men marching me with guns across the mountains. I mean, in those first few days, we walked up to like 18 hours a day, hardly eating, just constantly walking, and just and also in fear of your life. You don't know what these people wanted. They didn't tell us anything, you know, what their demands were. And every time I'd hear a gun being cocked, I thought, my God, they're going to shoot us.
And as well as that thought, what was going through your head at that time?
I was confused, I was scared, I was excited, I was, you know, a whole load of emotions. You know, you just don't know how you're supposed to feel in these situations. The main thing was I just wanted to know what was going on. I wanted to know what they wanted. I wanted to know what were their demands, because as soon as in my head, if I knew that, then I could work out how long we were going to be up here, but they weren't telling us anything.
And what was the dynamic among the group you were in? I guess there were about eight of you who were kidnapped?
Yeah, initially we were eight. One guy escaped on the first day, and then then there were seven of us, four Israelis, a German girl, a Spanish guy, and me. Quite early on, there became a division within the group between the Israelis and the Europeans, because the Israelis wanted to fight and wanted to kind of, you know, rebel against our captors, and we wanted to cooperate with them because we felt that would give us, you know, more food, more information, and that was the most important thing, was to get information about what was happening to us. The Israelis didn't believe this at all, and it caused quite a bit of friction within the group. I mean, saying that though, you know, we still were hostages together in the same situation, but just because you're hostages together in the same situation doesn't mean, you know, that you're all going to get on. You don't choose the people you're kidnapped with. But we all went through an extreme situation that kind of bonded us in that sense. But you also got to remember that we couldn't fight with our captors. We could kind of scream and shout at them, but only to a certain extent. So actually, I think some of the fighting probably turned in on ourselves, which wasn't healthy, but it gave us a release.
The group who captured you were the ELN, who were a revolutionary Marxist group, and I believe they told you after about 2 weeks what their aims were. Did you find yourself sympathizing with them at that point?
What they were fighting for came out slowly. They told us they were the ELN, and then they gave us a few reasons for why they were kidnapping us. Those reasons changed, and it was all kind of quite confusing. And it wasn't really until, you know, after our release, we knew exactly what they were fighting for. But what we did discover while we were up there was that they were trying to raise awareness of human rights violations, human rights abuses, against the indigenous people in that area, and also the kind of the local farmers. I mean, I'll admit I took comfort in that. It was, you know, it meant the kidnapping wasn't for money. It wasn't, you know, somebody ruining your life and stealing your money and ruining your future as well. That somebody might be getting something out of this kidnapping. As it turned out, you know, what we discovered from going back, that, you know, that was far from the truth.
Did you, to any extent, experience Stockholm Syndrome, where the kidnapped will identify with the kidnapper?
They're two words that are really heavily loaded, and I didn't want to use them in the film because I kind of think as soon as you do that, then everyone's looking out, and they're looking at that. But I would say that there is an element of it, and I think it's a syndrome. It's not a disease. It's something that you adopt as a survival technique, but you don't realise you're necessarily doing it at the time. But I wanted to find out more about them. I wanted to question them about their motives. I wanted to find out more about them as a group. I mean, that was for my own needs to kind of understand what was happening to me, but also to get in with them and to make them think, well, this guy is sympathetic to us. This guy, you know, he's almost on our side, I suppose. But the moment you come out of that situation, you've got to turn your back on all that, because actually it's all about your own survival. And I think whatever technique gets you through, you've got to adopt it. You've got a right to adopt it. You can do whatever. It's just something that until you're in that situation, you don't know what you will do, I suppose.
You were released after 101 days, I believe. How long did it take you, or rather, how was your readjustment to regular life afterwards?
I mean, when you get released from something like this, you are on top of the world. You're absolutely ecstatic. You just believe that nothing can touch you. You know, you're walking around almost in a, you know, in the clouds, in a daze. I mean, I didn't sleep for about 3 days. I was just wired on adrenaline. It's incredible flying back, and you're going back to your family. I mean, I landed in the UK on Christmas Eve, and so it kind of had even more meaning around that time of year. But slowly, you're... life adjusts, and slowly, you know, you start to realize what it was you went through. And slowly what I started to do was piece together what happened to us and other people's stories, because I wanted to find out exactly what happened on the outside. And that feeling of elation, it doesn't last. You know, a few months later, I hit a low. It's almost like your brain is now finally realizing what you went through. And that was particularly hard to take, because you've gone from feeling on top of the world to feeling quite fragile again, almost back to the state you were in while you were in captivity. But you have to piece your life together again. You have to, you know, and for me, that was about finding out as much as I could about the kidnapping. And then, you know, semi out of the blue, I get an email from one of my kidnappers, and that opened up a whole, you know, kept the book open, I suppose. I wasn't able to close it. And while I knew he was out there, I also knew I wanted to kind of meet with him and talk to him and find out what he could tell me. And so I suppose for the last 6 years afterwards, it was always bubbling under. There was always questions I had about the kidnapping. And now, from making the film and going back and meeting him, then they've now all been put to rest.
That was the remarkable twist in your story, that one of your kidnappers, this guy Antonio, contacted you by email. Why did he get in touch with you?
Antonio has his own motives, I suppose. I think he wanted to explain to us what it was that they were fighting for. He realised also as well, you know, that we were human beings and that we deserved that explanation. There was also a connection there, that though he was on one side of the fence, you know, we both lived up there, we lived in these mountains. He's not from the mountains, he's not that kind of person. He's a, you know, an educated guy, university background. And I think when they left the mountains, they wanted to reach out to us. And that's what they did. I mean, you know, we didn't know, I presume he didn't know that first email that it would eventually, years later, you know, end up with us going back to meet him. But I think it was always on my mind. As soon as I heard from him, and I think he wanted to explain the situation.
And what was your motivation? Because I know some of your family were opposed to you going back.
For me, as soon as I knew he was out there, I knew I had to go back and meet him. I knew, you know, otherwise I'd have so many questions for the rest of my life, I think. And my family obviously aired their concerns, and I had to take those on board because they had already lived through this experience. But what we did, and to make them feel assured that I was going to be safe, you know, is we put every security measure we could in place. There was no way I was going to get kidnapped again. I couldn't put my family through that again. So we spent as little time as possible in the dangerous areas that we went back to. We were escorted by the army, the Colombian army. But I suppose the driving force was that I wanted to go back. I wanted to find out, you know, my own story. I wanted to piece together, you know, put the whole jigsaw puzzle in place, I suppose.
What is your attitude to this guy, Antonio, today, your kidnapper? Do you forgive him?
Forgiveness is it's not as black and white as everyone would, I think, would like it to be. It's a grey area, but yeah, I, you know, from going back, from meeting him, from making the film, it's allowed me to put the experience in the past, and it's allowed, and I think forgiveness is part of that. If I was harbouring anger for the rest of my life, then it's that means the kidnapping has still got a hold on me. And I now understand his motives. I don't necessarily believe, well, I don't believe at all that what they did was right. But I now have an understanding of the thought process behind it. But also I have an understanding of him and of where he is on that kind of, that scale of, seeking forgiveness and saying he's sorry.
That was British filmmaker Mark Henderson, ending that edition of One on One by Ian Willoughby.